direct from the web, it's Billy Masters Live. And now, please welcome your host, Billy Masters.
Oh, God willing, this is all working today. Let's see how it's working. Oh, my God, we're back. People, please send me texts and let me know if you're seeing me and that everything is fine, because Monica's job depends on it. So hello, everybody. Welcome to Billy Masters Live. Today, oh, thank you. Today is Thursday, March 24th, 2022. Thank you. See, Monica's making up for that drunken episode last week. And I am, of course, Billy Masters. I am coming to you from Los Angeles, which I am rarely in these days since the pandemic. I have been in Boston and Florida, but I have not been in my beautiful little West Hollywood abode. And I am here today. I am thrilled because one of my favorite guests that I could have on time and time again, Sam Harris, is here. He has a show at the Catalina Bar and Grill up on Sunset this weekend, and then he's going down to San Diego, I think next week. We'll talk about it. He's been touring with a new show. But first, one of my dearest friends, former mayor of West Hollywood, former city councilor for like a million years, and somewhat due to me because I worked on his campaign, the fabulous John Duran is here. Hey, John.
I love that. Council member for a million years. That's what it felt like. That
is. It certainly did. Oh, my God. Didn't it? You know, it's funny. I think that in the way I can tell you how long it's been. Do you remember where your campaign headquarters were for the first run?
The old athletic club on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Which has been torn down for how many years?
Lifting weights and campaign.
Oh, and there was the pool and the sauna and everything. Oh, wait, John, have you frozen?
I'm still here.
There you are. And that was how long ago?
The year 2000. Yeah, I was in office from the year 2001 to 2020. 20 years in office. It's a long time.
More than enough.
Yeah.
Plenty of talk time. About term limits, for God's sake. Well, how long was Heilman in?
Heilman was there for 35 years, and I was the longest. John Heilman and I, we built WeHo, baby. We built it.
You know, before the show, you and I were talking about Pride is coming up. I mean, it's funny. We're in April, and yet we have to talk about Pride for a really positive reason, which is that this year, Prides around the country, hopefully, fingers crossed, are going to be able to gather in person for the first time in 2 years. I guess really like the first time in 3 years, really.
Yeah, very true.
And so I've been away from West Hollywood for a while, but let's sort of discuss what's happening here. For how many years did Christopher Street West, a nonprofit separate organization, run West Hollywood Pride?
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the history. So 1969 were the Stonewall riots in New York City. The following year, 1970, Reverend Troy Perry and Morris Kite applied to the city of Los Angeles for Christopher Street West Coast,
which is
how that got started. First parade was on Hollywood Boulevard. Terrible LAPD protest. LAPD didn't want it. More protesters than anything. You know, they had to fight the city of LA to try to make it happen. So 1971, they moved, or 74, they moved over to West Hollywood, which was LA County.
Which was still an unincorporated part
of LA County. The Board of Supervisors let them in. The sheriffs were a lot more tame than the LAPD. And it's been in West Hollywood ever since. And forever and ever until 3 years ago when CSW and Councilmember D'Amico and myself got into a fight about you know, whether CSW would continue in WeHo. We decided we wanted.
And for what let's stop there for a second. For what reason was there this discussion?
I think John D'Amico and I had our different reasons, but the fact was it was getting stale. It was getting stale. It was the same damn thing every year, and it was getting stale. And they were all caught up in, you know, the politics of the political left. And meanwhile, you know, it's supposed to be a celebration and a festival. not a political event, and it was becoming so politicized. I mean, granted, Stonewall was a political protest, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And precipitating that event, there was the debacle with joining or kind of trying to co-opt Black Lives Matter.
Well, that's what happened 3 years ago, the very last, during COVID, during 2020, after CSW had already declared they were leaving WeHo, their president, Esteban Montemayor, tried to piggyback.
Who you liked at one point.
I did at one point. We're not friends anymore. But he tried to piggyback the event on the Black Lives Matter march, and he pissed everybody off. The Black Lives
And what was Matter what was terrible about that was that the whole gay community was vilified. Why are you all trying to get the? And it wasn't us. None of us said we wanted to do that. It was his idea.
Yeah, very true. In fact, some of us, including myself, were very critical of it. Like, we don't belong. If we want to go support Black Lives Matter, it's their event. They have a message. They want to talk about why Black Lives Matter. We don't need to, nor should we try to put gay pride on top of that. It's not an exact fit. We can support it. We can be in alignment with it.
And we should.
But we're not it. We're not it, right? Terrible idea.
So this year, you know, after 2 years, there were virtual prides. We did one with the old Christopher Street West group. Which you were lovely enough to participate in.
Yeah, that was great.
And we did two because, again, we were stuck inside and we said, let's do something special. And to their credit, Christopher Street West did hook up with local broadcasters and did something on TV, which was also great. Right. So this year, Christopher Street West has picked up their tent and they've moved to Hollywood, and they keep talking about they're going back to their roots and they're doing, and not on the same weekend. And so somebody, and you'll tell me who, started up, instead of LA Pride, WeHo Pride.
Right.
On the same weekend we used to be in the same location with the same parade.
Right. So the West Hollywood City Council voted 5-0 to hire Jeff Consoletti, who, by the way, had been producing CSW, coordinating their event.
For Christopher Street West.
Forever and ever. So in essence, it's the same sort of organizer. There's going to be a parade in West Hollywood. First weekend in June will be on Santa Monica.
As it always was.
West Hollywood, as it always is. Second weekend in June, CSW is going to do something, I think, partly in Hollywood, partly downtown.
And God bless them.
Yeah, let them. I mean, you know what? We've got Long Beach Pride in May. We got Orange County Pride in August.
We have Valley. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for the Black community, we got Valley Pride.
Isn't this week Leather Pride?
Oh, I don't have anything leather on. I feel
I got a glove and a fist. So I think either that or I have a date tonight. But so the point being is that we are saying the more the merrier, do what you want. But people who are being told that there will not be a pride in West Hollywood are being told incorrect information.
Yeah. You know, that's small-minded people. There's going to be lots of pride in June. You know, and the city of West Hollywood celebrates Pride all month long with special programming. So there'll be, you know, lectures and art exhibits.
You'll be up to your ass in Pride.
So to speak. Yeah.
Some of you more literally than others. you've been, even though you're not a public official any longer, and you are a very busy, God knows, a very busy lawyer, you still are posting on social media COVID information and stuff that we need to know. So since I am back in West Hollywood, what is happening here? Do I need to wear masks in bars?
No.
Okay, so what? Give me the lay of the land.
Here's the lay of the land for Southern California and Greater Los Angeles. We're in the middle of the eye of the storm, right? Cases are down, only 500 cases a day. You know, hospitalizations are down, infection rates are down, everything is down. But there's a new variant called BA.2 that is coming.
It's actually already here in California.
They have scattering. Not any here in LA County yet, but it's coming. And we know it's coming because it's hitting Europe. It's hitting Asia.
England.
It's starting to hit New York. Same pattern, right? Just a matter of time. So what do we need to do? If you're vaccinated but not boosted, this is the time to get boosted. Go get your
booster. What about those of us who have already gotten our booster? What's happening with this fourth shot?
Yeah, the CDC is not saying it's time to do that yet. So, you know, and I'm like you. I am double vaxxed and boosted.
Yeah,
thank God I haven't caught anything, COVID.
Right, you haven't caught it this whole time. And God knows, we weren't sitting home hiding under our bed. We were still out there.
Yeah.
I was traveling a lot.
I got a feeling, Billy, I was out a lot. I got a feeling maybe I was exposed to it, but didn't know it because the vaccinations work, right?
Well, yeah, that's possible too. And I know before anyone even knew before anyone knew what COVID was, I believe Jennifer Lewis gave it to me because we were both so sick for 2 weeks with all the symptoms and in January. And then in March when they said, she said, I think I gave you COVID. So
that's not wonderful. A bad way. To I say. Love her, by the way. She's amazing. Wow. I love Jennifer Lewis. That is amazing. And I'm excited to have Sam Harris on the show today.
And we've talked about this. This is one of the silver linings of this time is that I started doing this in addition to the column, which is 22 years old, and the in-person appearances. Because I couldn't tour as a comedian, I said, let's start a show. And here we are, season three.
That's amazing.
It's killing me. Yeah. I've over 120 shows. So what do I need to know when I hit the streets in West Hollywood tomorrow night?
Well, currently there's no proof of vaccination required. There's no masking required.
Are they still doing the, you know, temperature on my forehead?
Not doing the temperature on the forehead. You see some people wearing masks. They may have their own reasons, you know. Maybe they weren't able to get a vaccine. Or maybe they feel like they want an extra layer of protection. It's okay. If you want to wear a mask, no power to you. But there's nothing required here in LA. But I think we're all gearing up for the next surge, which may come, you know, in the month of May. And so, you know, if you're not vaccinated yet and you're listening, what are you waiting for? Go get your vaccine. Go get your
vaccine.
And if you're vaccinated but not boosted, go get your booster. We're not out of it yet. Next surge is coming. Do what you can to be prepared. Be a good Boy Scout, right? Be prepared.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, John, thank you so much. I know you've got a lunch to go to, so
I do.
Thank you for coming in. I appreciate it. Please tell your lunch companion I said hello.
Sam Harris for me, because I'm a big fan of Sam Harris.
Well, he's the best. John, thank you so much. We'll have you back during Pride Month, I'm sure.
All right, Billy. I'll see you.
And I'll see you, hopefully I'll see you in the next couple
of weeks. You're in LA. Let's go have dinner.
Absolutely. Okay.
All right, love. See ya.
Bye, sweetheart. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, John Duran. All right. Let me tell you something about Sam Harris. I had to pull something up on my other computer and I didn't print it. And I know my friends are going to complain. Oh my God, you didn't print. You know, sorry, I'm very busy. Anyway, I have loved Sam Harris long before I even met him. And when I met, you know, it's very interesting in Hollywood. When you meet people, it is so easy to go either way. You will either love them more or you'll say, oh, that fucking cunt, I hate her. Sam Harris, I loved him even more. I saw, and Sam will tell me the date. I say this all the time. You would think I would know it. I saw Sam Harris do a show called Sam, S-A-M, at the Coronet Theater, I think, because I remember I walked there. And I wrote a review. And this is what I wrote in the review. Recently, I was asked to describe my perfect date for a personal ad. If I'd want someone wildly talented, funny, intelligent, adorable, has a hot little body, great taste, and amazing voice. In short, my personal ad would simply say, wanted, Sam Harris. And just to give you an idea what that's all about, here is a little clip of him in rehearsal for this show. I believe he gave me permission to run this, but God only knows, you know.
Hi, so we're doing a little live Facebook thing because we're rehearsing for our new show now that I've been on Small and Wide, Clean and Bright. You look happy to meet. Why are we singing Edelweiss?
I thought maybe we could bring it to the show.
We're not going to do Edelweiss. So, anyway.
Okay, he didn't give me permission to show that. This is what he gave me permission to do. Also, some rehearsal footage. Take a look.
Let's do a little song. Maybe we'll do two. Maybe we'll do one. Feel free to clap along. Dance along.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space.
Wait, when I say echo, then I'll go like, even your emotions had an echo. Okay, ready?
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo. It's so much space, too much. I think we'll cut that. When you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough, no. I just knew too much, yeah. Is that man crazy?
I love him so much. He makes me crazy. Please welcome to Billy Masters Live, Sam Harris.
Hi, Billy.
Edelweiss. I say it goes in the show.
Todd Schroeder. That was the great Todd Schroeder. We have been working together for almost 30 years.
When he said that, I couldn't believe it. Really?
It's crazy. I mean, I was just a very small child at the time, but he's like a father figure to me.
Sure.
We have been working together, and so we have this amazing collaboration where we literally breathe together. And
you have to with a good accompanist, because he's not an accompanist. He seems a collaborator.
He's a collaborator. He's a music director, and he also has a brilliant arrangement ideas. And he's also, when you're dealing with someone like me, you have to kind of be a therapist as well.
Why is that, Sam?
Because as much as I love it, performing is not always easy for me. I have chronic stage fright.
Right.
I have a lot of trouble getting on stage. Once I'm there, I have a great time. But there is not a time ever that I haven't thought, why am I doing this? What?
And has it always been like that?
Always.
Even when you were young, because I remember watching you on Star Search as a young little gay boy going, look, that's one of us. And you came out on the stage like a bull out of a chute, like you couldn't wait to get there.
All smoke and mirrors, my friend. I mean, that's true, though. When I step on the stage, I'm ready. It's getting to that place from the wings. Really? And I'm trusting it more, but I don't know. But Todd, then, you know, he's like my guy, and he just gets me there in so many ways. And then, as you know, I've had a little vocal trauma recently, which, you know, was basically almost 5 months of voice rest because I hemorrhaged a vocal cord, which hemorrhaged 3 times, and then I had surgery. Yeah. So I was quite... It was
and
awful.
I have to say, because, you know, we're friends. We're not friends that we talk every day or text each other.
Right.
But I saw this video that you posted, and I was in such shock. I mean, immediately I texted you, and I just want to show people this because it's scary. It's so scary, it scary to me.
Hi, my friends. I'm going against doctor's orders right now because I'm supposed to be on total voice rest for the next few weeks, after which I am having a vocal cord surgery. I have some damage on my left vocal cord, which needs to be corrected. I have the greatest doctor in the world. He does everybody. He sounds like a plastic surgeon, right? He does everybody. I've had so many friends who've had to have surgeries, and I never have had to have anything, even though I've sung really hard for a very, very long time. So I can't tell you that I'm not a little nervous, but I trust him completely. I know that after
recuperation and therapy, I will be not only back, but better than ever. So I sadly have to cancel anything that I had in 2021, concert dates, private dates, benefits, everything. Whatever can be postponed will be postponed. And I appreciate your love and support. Think of me, October 19th. That's my surgery day. And I apologize to anyone who is making plans to come and see me. But we'll get through. We'll make it. All right. Thank you.
What struck me when I saw it wasn't what you said.
It was
how you said it. It's that you were speaking on the breath. You were trying not to engage those chords. You weren't pushing it off. You were like, you're so enthusiastic. Let me just tell you. And I'm like, oh my God, this isn't good. So if that's how I felt and I was scared for you, how scared were you?
I was so eager at that point to have the surgery.
Really?
I was scared before then because I had these strained vocal cords and these hemorrhages. When we decided finally, after all this voice rest, to have the surgery, I was relieved because my doctor, Sean Nasiri, is the preeminent guy. Just he's the one. And I was so glad to finally have come to this decision. Okay, the voice rest did not work. Let's go in and fix this. I wasn't worried about being Julie Andrews. Worried about being Julie Andrews in the past for other reasons. anyway, he's a genius. And I also have the greatest vocal coach. Her name is Joan Lader. She's in New York. She's the goddess of
legendary.
She's legendary. And she came to my show in New York last week, and I was just sure she was going to give me notes. Anyway, she did, actually. She gave me two notes.
Of course she did.
She rehabbed me from talking, from having not talked, to speaking, to breath, to singing.
What was that like? How hard was that coming back?
It was scary a little bit. It was kind of delicious because I knew I was on the other side of something, but I would have these panic attacks. Oh my God, I've done it again. I've heard it again. And I would go to Dr. Sean and say, scope me, please. I need to see the videotape of my, you know. And he would just literally hold me by the shoulders and say, you've got to get out of your head. You've got to get out of your head.
And you know, your voice is your life. And these chords, people don't understand. These are very fragile. They're two little fragile things.
Tiny little muscle. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so easy for something to go wrong. Again, not with a good surgeon and people who know what they're doing.
Right.
But people
I trusted him. And I trusted Joan. And I'm really a good student. I take direction very well. So I did everything I was told. I did exercises every day. And honestly, Billy, I've been doing this a very long time. Unless I'm in the middle of I'm doing a show or I'm doing a run or I'm doing a whatever, I don't sing all the time. I don't sing really for my own pleasure that much. I definitely don't do exercises and routinely unless I have to, you know, unless I'm doing a show, a long run show, then I'd do it every day, of course. But this was the first time in my entire life that I was doing vocal exercises every day, you know.
Like a student.
Like a student. And now what's crazy is, so the surgery was the end of October. I didn't speak again till almost all of November. I started.
Danny must have loved that.
It was horrible because it was mostly like.
You got a husband, you got a kid.
And I'm like writing things on pads and I'm miming things. And sometimes they would just look at me blankly and make me really work for it.
Like a psychotic game of charades.
Exactly. And sometimes they were really supportive. But then there were times that they were like, this was a very big inconvenience for them.
Come on.
They were pretty great, as were my friends. I had a great support system. But, you know, I'll tell you, you have the doctor, you have the vocal coach, you have the supportive friends and family, and then you get the audience.
Which is a huge part of this.
Now, and I'll be honest with you, I had started to lose my joy for a while. And man, oh man, it feels so good because I started rehabbing my talking voice in December. Closer to the end of the year, I was singing a little. And then I had shows at the beginning of February. So I had, after all of this, I had shows a month or so after I just started making sounds again. And can I tell you the happiness? I'm singing better than I have in 10 or 15 years. And I'm singing smart. And it's
Do you feel your technique has changed? Because
yes, it has.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, I'm not James Taylor. I don't sit on a stool with a guitar and hum little songs. I belt my guts out. And I think I had started to do some bad habits over the years. And then, Billy, during COVID, none of us worked. So we were even rustier. It's a muscle, just like, you know, you don't just run a marathon out of the gate. So,
but you are somebody who I know you on stage.
Yeah.
And the audience makes you give more. Was there a danger of giving too much and repeating those bad habits and singing on the chords and pushing too much?
Giving too much, no.
Okay.
It's about the way I give.
Mm.
And I mean, I leave it all on the stage. You know that I've never phoned in a goddamn thing in my life. They're there. They're going to have everything I have. They're going to get everything I have. But I've just learned to be smarter and compress more and sing technically differently and recognizing that I can give everything I have without literally slitting my wrists.
Wow. So then this has really been a positive experience.
It's been a wonderful thing that happened to me. It's given me a whole new chapter on my life, my career, my voice, how I sing, what I sing. And this new show is, I'm having so much fun. It is such joy. It's also a celebration of coming together after this shit show we've been going through for 2 years. And I'm having the time of my life.
You know, because you say that and the joy comes forward, I want to show a clip of you in actual performance.
Okay.
So you, a couple weeks ago, you were at Feinstein's 54 Below in New York. Last week, oh, geez.
Yeah.
God, you know, I mean, talk about jumping right in.
Right.
And so this is how you open the show. There's just a clip of the opening of the show, which I think also has to take on bigger meaning for you, a song that you've done many times before.
So I've never done this song before.
Oh, my God. Really?
This is a new arrangement of this song.
It's a new arrangement. That's what I was going to talk
about. I've never sung it. Anyway.
All right. Let's show it. Okay. That's okay. Let's show it.
Your cares and your troubles are gone. Happy nights, happy days of here, no care.
I mean, it's just an extraordinary instrument you have. And you can hear, if you know anything about voices, you can hear that that is completely on the breath. It's supported. It's not pushed. But it's as powerful as ever.
Thank you. No, it is. I start this show. There's no, you know, piano introduction. There's nothing. I literally walk on the stage to applause and sing.
As you often do.
Please are here again. It's just quiet. And it is a celebration, certainly personally for myself, from what we're talking about, this trauma. But it's also for all of us that we're together and having a common experience and sharing our humanness and laughing and crying and thinking at the same time when we have been robbed of this for so long, because it's great to be able to stream. It's great to Zoom. It's great to do whatever. That we have had to learn to do. Look at the gift that this has given you with this show.
Phenomenal, yeah.
But
it's not live.
Like being in person in the theater, in a club. There is nothing like that. And what's great about it is, like, for instance, 54 Below, we had the live shows, but they also streamed it.
So see, now you've added to it.
Now we've learned that we can add, exactly, not replace, but add to.
Well, and I have to say now, as a comedian, I need that audience. I say a joke and I have to assume that dozens of people are laughing. Right. But for a singer, you also need the energy coming back to you. I don't know how many people understand that it is a conversation.
It totally is a conversation.
And with you. Now, there are singers who it is not a conversation. It is a monologue. But with you, it is a conversation.
I think that people who just love the sound of their voice, I guess that's true for them. But no. It is a conversation. It's definitely a back and forth. And as you know, I do a lot of comedy in my show. I mean, there are sections that are like 7 minutes of just jokes and laughing and relating and all that stuff. And again, it's what you're saying is... Also, what it does is it tells you, as a comedian, when you're doing something and you're going, if you're not getting at the laugh, if they're not, then you adjust, you change, you do. And it's an amazing thing, those of you guys that are watching, audiences have singular personalities. And absolutely. You can play, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and it feels like it's this. And then Friday, the audience is like a different person, all of them together, like a vibe in the room, and they don't laugh at this joke, or they do, or they're more sophisticated in a way, and they get this joke or this piece of music. It's really wonderful because it's never the same twice, ever.
And that's funny. I'm reading Harvey Fierstein's book, I Was Better Last Night,
yes.
And he talks about how every performer, that has such meaning. Somebody says, oh, the show is fine. It was better last night. You should have been there last. He's like, every audience is different. And we always think to ourselves, oh, if only it could be that great show. But I think we're at a point now where we're so grateful to have an audience that it was better tonight.
But, you know, there's funny because like when we did 54 Below, first of all, it's New York. It's my favorite place in the world. It's the only place I've ever really, really felt home. I love my life in Los Angeles. I love being here. I love what I have. I love our school. I love everything. But New York is New York. And so when I walked out on that stage after COVID, and that was the last place I played before COVID, right at the very end of 19. And then walking on stage with no music fanfare, no nothing, and just being able to stand there and accept what was going on, letting them applaud, feeling like, oh my God, here we are together. And it was an amazing audience. And I had a wonderful show. And then, of course, immediately, instead of saying it could have been better last night, immediately is like, oh, tomorrow it's going to be terrible.
It'll never be as good as tonight.
The audience will never be as receptive. It'll never be as good. The jokes will never fly as well. It's just, so you can't win.
But thank God you taped it. See, this is what we've got.
That was the second night.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. you know, I'm going to talk about something. People at home are going to say, boy, that Billy is so rude. But I'm going to bring this up for a reason. Is that very early in the show, you address something that we all have been through with this COVID. And you do it in such a funny way. And you're, again, you are so self-deprecating. And you say, I want to address
the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, I'd like to address the elephant in the room. Me. Because I gained 30 pounds during COVID. Yeah. No, there's a whole monologue about this.
Oh, well,
and there's by a show of chins, how many of you people, and the whole audience raises their hands.
Well, because everybody in there, and it's not like we're going to pretend like we look like we did 3 years ago, and that any of us do. But you and I, again, we did shows through this whole pandemic, and I remember us vividly talking about the fact that we hadn't put on pants that weren't elastic waist for like a year.
And you didn't need to.
And we knew subconsciously, we just didn't think about it.
Well, there was a moment that I realized that I had only worn sweatpants for a year and sweat, really? You know, so you have no gauge. Sweatpants are the delusion that all is well in the kingdom. And it's just not true. It's not true. But I've lost about 12 of that 30, Billy.
Oh, is it 30 that you put on? Okay.
I put on 30.
How? Do you know what it was in particular?
why I gained 30?
Yeah, well, no, what was like the big thing that was your big indulgence that added the put the weight on?
Well, I love to cook. I'm a really good cook.
And you didn't know that.
Yeah, and so I made these lavish meals 4 times a week. Like,
because you were home with time.
Complicated, and they would take, you know, lots of preparation, and there would be desserts, and there would be, and I made breads and all this stuff. And so, you know, we didn't have, those of us in the performing arts didn't really have a lot to do. So we had to refocus and recommit to something else and dedicate it. So I chose eating.
And cooking. You got a skill.
And I love feeding people. Of course, I couldn't feed anybody but my family because we were quarantined.
Hence the 30 pounds.
Yeah. Somehow they didn't gain any weight. I don't
know. Yeah, I was just going to ask, did Danny or Connor get it?
Did not.
Well, so, but did that, because you and I know weight can contribute to vocal issues. Was that connected at all, or was it totally separate?
Weight could contribute to vocal issues?
Yeah, because
they're opera singers fat.
Yeah, but there are people who it also late. Well, it depends how, if you're singing, but some opera singers, they lose the weight, they lose the support. Some people who are always skinny, they gain the weight and the voice becomes heavy. So it can affect the voice in lots of ways.
I know that when I'm recording an album, I gain weight because I am eating all the things that make you sing better, which is salt and grease. Salt and grease. I eat burgers. I eat fried chicken. I eat tons of potato chips. And I always...
And avoid alcohol because it dries out.
Yeah, that dries you out. You have to just... I, you know, and salt. I love salt and it's good for them. So, yeah. Meanwhile, that's not a way you can actually live. I'll tell you a funny story.
Please.
When I was doing The Producers and Carol Channing came with Frank Langella to see my show.
As one does.
And so we went out after, and Carol was like, Sam, she goes, how can you, because I was playing Carmen Ghia, right? Who doesn't really sing except one thing. She says, how can you, when you can sing like you, how can you be happy not singing in the show? Like, and then she went, oh, I understand. You can have dairy. And those of us as well. Because you can't ever have dairy when you're doing a show because it makes everything clicky.
Yeah. So, right.
Yeah.
You know, again, I think people don't recognize that about you because they take the voice as the package. You're so funny. You're such a talented actor. You really can do so many things that it isn't just voice. I think people who haven't seen you on stage, although you've also had TV shows where you've shown what a great actor, particularly a comedic actor, you're really talented.
Thank you, Billy.
But you've always been funny.
Yes, I've always loved comedy. And you know, it's funny because I started doing a lot of comedy in my show. I was creating a show. Right. It was so ballad heavy because I love the ballads that my comedy became my up-tempo numbers. So when I was structuring a show, it was like, okay, I've done this ballad. Now it's where an up-tempo number should come. I don't have one. So I'm going to do some funny for the same length of time. And then I also learned from great teachers, but one in particular, my director, Jerry Blatt, that when you give people, when they relax through laughing and you can make them laugh and they relate to something and it's humanized. And as you say, it's self-deprecating. I'm always all about that. It makes people more available then for something that's emotional because they trust you and they've laughed with you. And so it just makes it easy. You know, it's all very, very personal to me. And there's so many songs, new songs in the show that we chose to do a lot of new things or dug up something from the past a long time ago. And so it feels really reinvented and new. And I'm having a ball. It's so great to be able to say that.
Well, and it's funny because in that clip that I showed of you doing Crazy with Todd, he says something to you about, he says to you, well, you say that is trying to get me do some new songs. And you think that he's going to say, because I want to lighten up the show and have some fast numbers. And he says that he just wants to get you into the 20th century.
The 20th.
So I think both things can be valid at the same time.
Well, he's, you know, listen, if you're performing all the time, then I think that that's easier to do and you create new things. When it's spread out, you kind of like, okay, what's the repertoire? Let's pull this together. We might do one here, one there. And in this case, I mean, I'm doing a Lady Gaga song. I'm doing Crazy. These are not, you know, Crazy is not a brand new song, but it's
new to you.
But it's new to me.
There was that old NBC commercial when they do summer reruns. They said, if you didn't see it, it's new to you.
Yeah, it's true. No, but it's great. And the place that we're playing this weekend on Friday and Saturday, this tomorrow, isn't it? Oh, my.
I know. I'm coming tomorrow night.
It's coming. You are coming tomorrow night?
I am. I'm coming tomorrow night.
Yay. I love that place. It's great. It's a great venue.
Great feel. Now, it's a warm room.
It's a great place. And it's also proper stage and all that. And I hope you folks will come, because I'm really, really excited about this.
And we should tell people that your show is called Openly Gray. And let's talk about that, because that's another thing that's happened during COVID, which is that you are gray.
Yeah, I've been gray for many, many years. So it's new to you. Yeah, I find that so many people that I know, both actors and people who are not in our industry, just said, look, I'm home. It's like the sweatpants. I'm not going to do it all and dye it all and beat my face and do all whatever that stuff. Yeah. It's like, this is it. This is me. And it really brings an awakening to what the authenticity of that is.
Absolutely.
And my husband.
How does it make you feel?
Well, right now, look how long it is, Billy.
It's thick too. I mean, you've got a good head of hair.
Well, thank you. I actually like it. I'm enjoying it. I'm accepting. I'm embracing my daddy.
Your daddiness. What about the goatee? How did that happen?
Well, I've had this off and on for years and years. Mm-hmm. I've never had the guts to grow one of those giant beards. They look
There's
good.
No
on,
need for that.
Not on me. But I also did during COVID. I got some more ink.
Yes. We show that in the ad. People can see the tip of it on your arm. But I'm told it goes down like to
I have
the
it here. Here.
Area.
Yep. It's here. Let me see if I can do this. I have all. I'm very inked.
Yeah. When did this all happen, Sam? I've seen you shirtless. You never had that before.
No, it's just something I've always wanted. And then, you know, you start and it's like, oh, I think I'll fill this space as well.
And that's what people say once you start. Oh, gee, the other arm too.
This is done here, but this is not. I'm probably going to finish that. And then.
Are you going to be sleeved eventually?
And, you know, some people, it's like, no, never. I'm never going to go below the elbow.
Oh, okay.
I like it. Listen, here's the funny thing. I'm old. And so when people are like, oh, but it's a permanent decision, I'm like, how much longer could I have? How, you know.
And you did talk about that in the show. How old are you, Sam?
I am 60 years old.
That shocked me.
Really?
Yeah. And I know that we're like in the same milieu of ages.
What milieu are you in, sir?
I'm 54.
Okay, well,
54 below, born in 16. Right. I kind of assume everyone is my age. And, you know, for years we were the same age.
That's right. I tried to change my driver's license at one point.
You did not.
I tried to change my IMDb. That's for freaking sure.
Oh, geez. Well, that you should do. Everyone should.
You know, and they just don't let you. They just don't let you. I've tried to be 5 years younger.
Well, you look 5 years younger.
Constantly telling me how old I am.
Yeah, who needs that?
I don't know. But what am I going to do? Can't get rid of him.
So I got to bring up, you were in New York as we said, doing 54 Below, and you got to do something that people very rarely get to do. First, you got to relive a moment on stage that you had on Broadway, and in the same week, you got to see a revival of that show.
Yes.
I loved you in that show, The Life by Cy Coleman. Yeah.
Yes, right? Cy Coleman. Yes. I loved that show so much. I had great songs. And you know, when you get to originate a role and invent something.
Well, you opened the show, if I'm
I not opened the show with Here's What You've Got. And then I closed the first act as well, and I opened the second act.
I mean, come on.
Great material and extraordinary cast. Yeah. Pardon me?
You were phenomenal in it.
Oh, thank
Let me
you.
Say that again. You were phenomenal in it. Thank what was you. That?
Come again?
And you had original cast members at your show at 54 Below.
I did. I had some cast, the live cast members who came because I did use What You've Got, which you said is the opening number of the show.
Phenomenal song.
And this character was great for me too because his name is Jojo, and he was a villain. He's like this Iago character that sort of pulls all the evil together.
He's like a puppet master in a way.
He is. And it's so much fun because, you know, Mr. Pink Jinx was always playing something that wasn't that. So I loved it. I loved it. And then I sing Use What You've Got in my show. Mm-hmm. And I had some of my castmates there. And, you know, which made me just so happy to do it for them. And that was and then I got to go see Billy Porter, who's a very dear friend, his re-envisioning of the show.
What did you think? Because Katie had, from your cast, Katie had written a very long review. Yeah. She wrote a very long review about it.
And so online? What do you mean?
On Facebook, yeah.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, she wrote a very long thing. So I was curious, what did you think? She just felt it was a totally different show. And that she found it hard to even say it was our show. It's their show.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any, I mean, I know what she means because it's really reimagined. It's the arrangements by James Sampleener, who is a wonderful, wonderful musician. And he made it more funkadelic and more like Shaft. Mm-hmm. That was the period, it was 1980. And Billy moved things around. He restructured stuff. He moved songs, he cut songs. He took my character, Jojo, and made it to a young Jojo and an old Jojo. And the old Jojo was more like it was a narrator from current times. Mm-hmm.
Which Jojo got Use What You've Got?
The young one.
Oh, fuck him. Anyway, all right.
No, but then when I did it, I opened
You were the young one.
Times, and then I went back in time. So I was both.
Oh, that's true, right.
Yeah. So, and it was exciting, and some of the cast was just extraordinary, mm-hmm. and Billy politicized it a lot, too. His comments on just our current situation and sort of the politics of the time and the economy of the time, mm-hmm. and it was just great. It was great to hear the music. It was great to see these characters, and it was great to see friends who I did the show with, my friend Felicia Fenley, who was at the show at 54. And we had so much fun in it, and she was my date to the show. Mm-hmm. So it was very, and it was emotional, and it was great.
Yeah.
It's a big undertaking because, you know, in the first days of City Center, they stood with a book at a stand and they did a concert sort of reading.
They were not staged, really, right.
No, and then as time went on, like when Anne Reinking did Chicago there, it was off book. But it was very simple, all in black. And yes, it was choreographed because that's what the show is about. And she re-choreographed in the style of Fosse. That show moved as it was.
Yeah. P.S. running now 25 years later. I mean,
25 years later, it's still running. They're wearing the same
black. Pamela Anderson.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. And she's actually, I mean, I don't know if she can sing, dance, or act.
I don't care.
But
your last Broadway? No, I guess The Producers was your last Broadway show, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But now at City Center, with Billy's production of this, mm-hmm. it's full on costumed and choreographed and off book. And they do this all in like 8 days.
That's insane. Extraordinary.
You have to come in knowing your show, and then they put it on its feet. So it's intense. I mean, like, I don't know that I would be capable of doing that.
Well, you have to walk in with a performance and completely off book and say, now fine tune it.
Right. Now what do you want to do with me? Yeah.
Right. You know, it's been how many years since you were on Broadway?
Well, that was
10. We were saying the producers. So that's
So probably not nine. It was like 2002, I think, or three.
All right. So about 10 years. And, you know, you've talked about the fact that you wouldn't want to necessarily go back to Broadway to go into a show. You would want to go back if you got to originate a show or help create a show. For years, I know it was the Jazz Singer, it was the Jolson show.
Right, right.
Is that still in the ethos, or we've moved on? Have you fired? Because that was how many years? That was like 20 years.
We worked on that for years. And, you know, we actually had our Broadway, we had our theater, we had our out of town, we were at the Colonial in Boston. We were going to be, you know, it was a huge thing for me. And it was such one of those horrible show business stories, Billy, because, you know, we did all their backers auditions. We were ready. We were going. We had our costume fittings. We were there on my birthday on June 4th. There was a thing in the New York Times that morning, the feature that I had done that had me on one knee, you know, with my hands out like Jolson.
Mammy.
Exactly. And it said, it was so wonderful. Who else could play this? Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, perfect.
He was the greatest entertainer. It was like all this stuff. Later on that day, I mean, I was in heaven. I was like, this is my Mama Rose, right?
Yeah, of course.
I was in heaven. By the end of the day, I got a call that said all of the money has been pulled out because they had one producer and something happened with Cold Feet or his own investments or something. It was over. It was over.
Like
on my birthday and on the day that this feature came out. And we went to Joe Allen, which was like my spot.
Of course.
And we sat there and in just disbelief. Just
shell-shocked, I'm sure.
Shell-shocked. And then for probably, I don't know, years, it was rewritten and redone. And just the show just got better and darker and more interesting. And a number of but I'll tell you what, Billy, I think there's a lot to say about that, but it's very hard now also to have a protagonist that did blackface.
Oh, I think you're right.
It's not the time. No. And now that we commented on that, it was about that. And we had a black character who was doing whiteface and.
Oh,
was,
wow. That would
very, very, got very dark and very insightful about the time and the culture and what that meant and his perception of the innocence around that. But today,
you know, in a way, maybe this is the time because people need to be reminded that doing it does not make you a villain. You have to put it in historical context.
I suppose, but that's kind of like saying, you know, that a statue of Robert E. Lee was in historical context. So let's leave it there. I don't.
Like, I wonder if Mad Men, with all the stuff that the bosses were doing to the secretaries today, if that show started, if people would be outraged.
I think so.
Yeah, it's a very weird time.
Because I think that if we're trying to elicit an emotional response for a person who doesn't get that, then we're making an excuse for it.
Because we're glamorizing it by putting it on TV.
And we're making you want to, it's just like, well, he didn't know any better.
And doesn't that look cool?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think.
So given that Jolson is now off the table, and that must have been hard to say, this is off.
The composer died. There were some rights issues, because at some point we were going to take it over and do it, and there were some rights issues, and it just became uncomfortable. And so I think we just moved on, and it's for the best. It's sad. I have, you know, I probably have 15 scripts in my library of scripts and things of different versions of this. There were some great songs and some great arrangements and wonderful people on it. But, you know, it's the life. I came in at the end right before Broadway. That had been in development for 10 years, and that was Cy freaking Coleman. That had been in development for 10 years. It is, I remember, because it's always so hard for people to get projects going. I remember reading this article about Martin Scorsese taking 7 years to finance something. And I'm like, well, if Martin Scorsese is having trouble getting a film on, what does that say for some other dumb schmuck who's like trying to get their indie money? I mean, it's really hard. So when you do see something make it, to the stage or you know, to the filmed, it's a remarkable accomplishment.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you hear about these passion projects that somebody's like, I've had the perfect cast and then this one wasn't available. Do I recast? Do I wait?
And then you wait
and somebody else. No, it's a mess. Anyway, so given that that's not on the plate, do you have a dream role or project or even better, character that you would like to play?
Interesting. There is not something specific.
I
do know that I want to play things at this time and at this age that, like, I wouldn't want to go into the Music Man. You know what I mean? Someone else can do that. I want something with a little weight to it.
Mm-hmm. Gravitas.
Pardon me?
Gravitas.
Edge. Yeah. Well, and some edge or just a full range, a nice full range. It doesn't even have to be musical. And I'm also, as you know, I'm an author. Mm-hmm. And my book, that's my second book, The Substance of All Things, I really want to see that through to be a limited series. And there's some talk about doing that. That would make me so joyful. I have never been one that is just happy doing one thing.
Right.
And you kindly mentioned earlier that while I may be identified primarily as a singer, I do lots of different things. And that's kind of how I stay creative and happy. And that, we were joking about it, but that's also why I cooked during COVID. Mm. Cooking is
a creative,
intimate experience. And if I wasn't an actor and a writer and all that, then I would probably be a chef because it's creative, because it's something, I'm just going to sound almost grotesque, I guess, but there's something extraordinary about creating something and then people actually ingest it. It is so, you know what I mean? It's like,
well, it's got to be like performing, that you create a show and then people enjoy it. It's the same thing.
Exactly. And it's immediate gratification.
Yeah. Oh, and you also can see or hear that response. It's not like a book where somebody goes home and maybe you'll get a letter, but you know, you're not going to usually. And I think people don't understand, because memories have become very short. Multi-hyphenates, which I consider you, used to be the norm. People used to do comedy, drama, they sang, they danced, they did everything. You take a Carol Burnett and she says, what do you need? And I'll do whatever you need me to do. And I think these days, and you'll tell me, maybe this has not been your experience, but it seems to me that the more you do and the less defined in a narrow box that your character is, the less they know what to do with you. Because they're like, well, he does so many things, we don't know what to put in it. When the answer is, put me in anything.
Yeah, I think that you make a good point. I think it's easier for people if a person does one thing. But I mean, listen, look, did you see that J-Lo thing from a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
Good Christ. First of all, she's, you know, looks amazing. She dances her ass off. She's singing really great. She's a marvelous actor. She's a producer. She writes.
And she's making her own opportunities.
She is. And she's in the position to do that. But that did not come easy. And she's a woman.
And a Latina. Let's throw that in too.
So I think what you're saying is true, but I also think that when people do find a platform for whatever the primary thing was that they were discovered doing, or that they made the world know they do, then many people, I think, do branch out and say, you know what, I also do, you know, I also write, or I'm also actually a dramatic actor, or whatever it is. And that's thrilling. And I do find that creative people are very often multi-talented. Because you put it into, you know,
whatever project you're working on,
whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, I paint. I love painting.
Yeah, I heard you say that during the show. What? Then you made the joke.
I made the joke.
But
no, I'll, you know, I'm not great at everything, but
you'll try it. And yeah. Is that the fun, the trying something new? Do you get the thrill out of saying, well, or why can't I paint?
I love the thrill of making something that didn't exist before.
Yeah.
And now it exists. And sometimes it's great and sometimes it's not. And I always know, by the way. I don't think really? I'm blind. I don't think I'm blind. I'm like, oh my God, that was so good. No. I can pretty much tell what halfway through. But that's true for any of these things that we're talking about. But when I know it's good, I also know it's good. You know?
You know, along those same lines, we played the clip of you singing Happy Days, which now I know you'd never sung before. Yeah. But it brings up a point. When you love a song and decide to cover a song, which you do a fair amount of covers in this show, there are two ways that it can go with performers that I've been aware of. One, they love it so much that they fell in love with the perfect arrangement and that is how they want to do it because that's how they hear it in their heads. Versus somebody say, I love that song, but how can I make it my own and put a different spin on it? When you approach a song like the Get Here, it's very simple and it's very pure and classic. Versus Happy Days is shifted a little bit. The meter is a little different. The drive is different.
Right.
So I'm just curious, how do you sort of approach a song? Do you fall in love with? Do you try not to hear other versions and see what the song does to you?
I listen to the words.
Mm.
I'm a lyric person. And like Get Here, yes, I did it. It's a perfect song. And I did it as is sort of traditional. But then we take it off in completely different directions and different chords. And I sail over to certain places. The song, another song that's in the show, the Beatles song, Help, which I sit and play at the piano. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. I listen to these lyrics and I'm like, oh my God, these lyrics are heavy and gorgeous.
Yeah, this isn't a dance song. This is an emotional connection.
It's classic, but... Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. It's a cry for something. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, so much younger than today, never needed anybody's help in any way. Instead of when I was younger, so much younger than today, right? And I heard these lyrics and it told me what to sing. It told me what to play. And it always comes from the words for me.
Mm. And it also shows the versatility of the song, the genius.
Absolutely. You know what? My favorite compliment is when I get it is I never heard that lyric before. I've heard that song hundreds of times and I never heard that lyric before. I'm like, I did my job.
That is your job.
I did my job. You heard it in a different way that you related to in a way that you hadn't prior. That's like, then it's like, okay, all right. I did my work.
And do you like taking a song like that and really making somebody listen to it in a different way?
Yeah, I do. And I don't think everything, as you said, has to be done that way. It doesn't have to be some sort of singular interpretation. There's a song I sing in the show, the Janice Ian song, Jesse.
It is
poetic. It is perfect. I might change. I stylize whatever it is a little bit for myself, which is never the same way twice.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But I don't touch. I don't touch. The song, it is
the melodic line.
It's perfect.
God, what songs have you done for 30 years that have changed?
They've changed for me.
Yeah, but it changed in how you interpret them. That you've like, you know, now I want to do it a different way. I have to keep it fresh.
I don't typically change a song that I've already done, but my understanding of it changes. I mean, how many thousands of times do you think I've sung Over the Rainbow?
More than Patti LaBelle at this point.
And I will tell you that depending on what happened that day or that month or that year or something, it affects the way I perceive it. Mm-hmm. It's a triumphant song. It's a hopeful song. It's a fearful song. The lyric why can't I is both can be why can they and not me, or it can be why can't I, god damn it.
And everybody comes to that song with their own baggage because they all grew up with it. Who knows how they're seeing it?
And but since I have to sing it so long, so many times, I have to find something new. And it's so funny when sometimes I'll sing a song that I've sung for years and I'll be like, oh, that's what that means. Oh,
wow, really?
Yeah, I'll discover something new about it. And of course, it just means that because that's what it means right then.
It's funny when you did From the Life, Use It You've Got. I was laughing because I remember vividly seeing you do that show. And it was like, you know, there are some people that when they do a song, the body muscle memory is there, that the stance is there, the movements are there. I remember till the day she died, Ethel Merman, when she would do Life is Just a Bowl of Cherries, she did it with the choreography somebody taught her in 1935. And I'm like, that's just how she does it.
Right.
And it brings that back in her. And you transported me back in time to seeing you on that show because your face changed, your physicality changed. And it was a character performance.
Certainly. Certainly. And I look at most of my songs as a character performance.
Mm.
And that doesn't mean that I'm playing, I have a different name and I'm whatever. That's true when you're doing a show, of course, or when you're singing a song from a show.
Yeah.
But it's also, I always try to create, there's a beginning and a middle and an end to each of these little playlets, these songs.
Well, the story about your friend who took the photograph, Charlie.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a real story.
But what I'm saying is the song becomes a scene.
Exactly. And I think with anything, with any song, it has to have an arc and it has to come to something. Otherwise, it's just the same all the way through, I think. And I think that the words tell you what to sing, too. You know, there's a old thing. It's like if a lyric repeats, why are you saying it again?
Of course.
You have to have a reason to say it twice if it's the chorus. Mm-hmm. You can't just do it the way you did the first time, or you can't think of it the same way you did the first time, because why am I saying this again? Am I convincing you? Am I convincing myself? Am I trying to find out what I mean? This is what makes it interesting for me anyway. This is just my little tricks to keep
things. And does that change night after night?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. What is the song that is the easiest for you to get right into? Because you've done it so often, or are the newer songs the easiest songs to just go into because they're so fresh?
That's a good question. I don't know. I do, I do know that by starting my show with Happy Days Are Here Again, it's many things. It's like I said, for me, it's a celebration of being able to sing after I didn't know if I was good. It's the celebration of being at the end of this COVID thing. And it's also the arrangement and the way that it grows and does is so safe for me vocally. It's all of those lessons and all of those things at once. That it's like when we are rehearsing or we're doing sound check, I want to do that song because
really?
It makes me grounded. Mm-hmm. And that's a brand new song and a brand new arrangement. So that's an easy one, Billy, that I can get right to because...
Wow.
And that's why I'm not entering with a ba ba da ba da ba da da. You know, it's quiet. It's quiet.
And also, it ends on a surprise.
Yes, yes, it does.
You know, which is also really interesting musically, is that you think you know where this is going, and then it's going to go someplace. Even in that last note, that you're like, oh, didn't see that coming. Boom, it's over.
Exactly. Got it. You got to slap them around a little bit, right?
You know, like this show, you don't know where it's going to go and boom, it's over. And Sam, we're kind of at the end. But I do want to say once again, Openly Gray. And I love the title, by the way. I just love the title. I think it's so interesting because it's so multifaceted.
Thank you.
When did the title come to you?
A friend and I were having a conversation and I made the joke because it's like openly gay. And we were just talking about my hair and us, everybody sort of letting down their, you know, whatever their things were. I was like, I'm openly gray. And we laughed.
And you're like, oh, remember that.
Write that down. So Billy, how do people, that are watching this get to know the information about how to get tickets tomorrow. And
so we will put right now, after we hang up, I will put in the description the link for the Catalina Club and also the San Diego dates. Or I may also put them, also send them to your social media. Is Facebook probably the best one that has all the links too?
I guess. I don't know.
Who knows? I know. I'll put the links for
these. Now. For now, it's Catalina Bar and Grill in Hollywood on Sunset tomorrow, Friday, the 25th.
And I'm going to be there too. So come.
You're going to be there. Come. See us. And Todd is just the best. He's the best.
And he's not bad to look at.
He's not, is he? He's got a real sexy vibe going now.
I've been seeing
guy with fuzzy hair.
I've been seeing you with him for at least, there was a show, I don't even remember. It was someplace outside here, like in a courtyard area, that there were lanterns on the ground. It was a strange place. I don't remember. But I remember meeting him and saying, he's got these intense eyes. And he can sing. He sings a little in this.
He's a great singer. He's a great player. And he's a great person. And he's like my musical soulmate. And I am forever grateful for him.
So what can we say? You don't want to miss it. Catalina Bar and Grill, Friday and Saturday, right?
Tomorrow.
Which is fine, because Sunday you got the Oscars. So, you're going to stay home. Right. Nobody's going out. And then is it next week or the week after yours?
No, it's not. It's the week after that. I think it's April 8th and 9th.
Okay, I'll put that in as well. San Diego, where? Where are you in San Diego? Do you know? You don't know. I do.
It's called Martinis.
Martinis over whatever.
Yeah, something.
Martinis. Yeah, I know. Who knows? Well, as long as the check clears.
I'll be there.
You'll see him. You'll sing whatever
you want. And thank you, my friend. I'm grateful to you, too. I'm glad that you have really just exploded and blossomed during this period. You're so freaking funny and loving, and you're such a mensch, and I just adore you.
You know, and it goes likewise. And one of the things that we found during this pandemic is really who our friends really were, because we did all get through this together. Yep. Nobody did it alone.
Indeed, indeed.
And so I'm glad I get to celebrate with you in person.
Me too. Tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Thank you for being here. I'll see you backstage. If you hang around a minute, I'll see you.
All right. Okay.
Bye, Sam. Everybody, thanks for watching Billy Masters Live. Go see Sam Harris. I'll put all the stuff up there. Next week, we are doing an Oscar show. We're going to have Bruce Valanche. We're going to have a panel. And so Bruce Valanche is going to be here. And, we're just going to have a lot of fun. I got to look and see if there are any other things I'm supposed to announce. I don't think so. Oh, in like 2 weeks, David Pevsner is here. Harvey Fierstein is going to be here. Oh, we've got so many guests. Just impossible. Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon West. Thank you for watching. I am Billy Masters. And just remember, if we're here, we're live. Bye, guys.